Dr. Nicholas Waldron is a geriatrician. He's also the clinical lead of the Falls Prevention Network with the Department of Health in Western Australia. Falls cause substantial patient harm and health services use among elderly patients. As part of December 2012's Focus on the Elderly, we discuss an evidence-based update on falls prevention. Dr. Waldron, can you tell us why falls in older adults are a problem?
Yes, falls are a problem for a number of reasons. Firstly, they're very common, and people in their 70s, over 40% will fall annually. The impact on the patient can be very significant. Not all falls result in a negative decline, but for many patients, they cause both injury, such as head injuries or hip fractures or other fractures that are the most severe, but also bruises and cuts, and this impact can impact the psychology of the patient to lead to a reduction in activity, fear of falling, and ultimately an increased rate of risk of falls. And the good news is that prevention is possible. The other main reason for them being important is the effect on a societal health system, both with the increasing number of fall-related hospital presentations, but also the increased associated cost, which is really escalating. Why do falls occur? Well, usually it's a multifactorial combination of factors. So what I mean by that is factors related to the patient, such as their age and maybe level of physical activity, and then medical conditions they may have on top of that, such as diabetes or Parkinson's disease. They're also this interacts with the medication they're prescribed, and then finally an interaction with the environment. So often a fall occurs as a kind of final step in a combination of all these factors, and that's why usually there's multiple causes, and we need to provide a kind of comprehensive approach. Having said that, not all falls are due to multifactorial reasons, and some falls can just occur just as part of an older person being active, and those falls we may not need to do much about. So, for example, perhaps someone running in the bush when they slip on a honky nut. So that's kind of an activity that most people might fall if they were under that circumstance. And there's also around 15% of falls are due to a single reason, so such as orthostatic hypotension, a cardiac arrhythmia, seizure, or other kind of identifiable medical condition. And these can be addressed just by dealing with the problem that caused the fall.
Now, because of the morbidity that you touched on earlier on that are associated with falls, it would be, of course, useful to the general practitioner to know which older adult is likely to fall. Is there a way of predicting, perhaps in the clinic or in a residential home setting, who is going to fall?
Well, in the clinic setting, I guess the biggest factor to predict further falls is, surprise, surprise, a past history of falls. So that's why we generally recommend this question get asked annually. And then other important factors are really related to their balance and mobility. So they may either report problems with their mobility or balance, or if there are some examinations performed, can try and identify these problems. That kind of examination can be simple, such as a single leg stance where the person stands on one leg with their eyes open for 10 seconds on three occasions. And if they can't complete all of those tests, then really they have a balance deficit and will benefit from a physical intervention, exercise intervention. But to be honest, I think just the general practitioner observing the person walking and making a judgment at the end of the bed is also a useful way of identifying that more frailer person who would benefit from intervention. Having said that, there's a general, the other approach is to say, well, everyone benefits from exercise intervention because there's good evidence for the general population that the prescription of Tai Chi for all older adults, regardless of balance deficit, is still beneficial. So these broader kind of more high level exercise interventions can be really applied to everybody.
I'd love to get more into that evidence in a minute, just with residential aged care, is there a way of predicting in that setting who is going to fall? Would you suggest that GPs can use, say, the single leg stance test or the timed up and go test in that setting as well?
There are different tools that can be used to identify those at higher risk in residential care, but for the busy general practitioner, I think it's sensible just to consider that everyone is at high risk of falls, because really the rates are very significant, with 1 in 2 residents falling annually. So really everybody should be considered at high risk of falling.
Now, you mentioned before Tai Chi, and in the article you do discuss evidence-based strategies for falls prevention. Could you highlight what some of these strategies are?
Yes, well, I think that the big ticket item really is exercise, and but the trouble is this has to be prescribed with specific characteristics to be beneficial in terms of falls prevention. So I always say, you know, we should be recommending older people have both exercise for cardiovascular health, but also for falls prevention, and that these are both of equal importance. In terms of what's effective exercise for falls prevention, it can be for Tai Chi, or it can be performed in group settings, or it can be prescribed individually usually by a physiotherapist. There are a number of programs which are effective, and these differ around different states of Australia, and some are available in some won't be throughout regional Australia as well. But really the characteristics the GP should hone down to are that the exercise should be greater than 2 hours per week, that it should address balance and should be moderate to high challenge to the balance. So it needs to go push the person outside of their comfort zone for postural stability. It's important to note that walking is not required for the falls prevention benefits. In fact, brisk walking should be avoided because that increases upper limb fractures. So walking can be included, but it shouldn't chew up too much of the 2 hour time frame. And equally, strength's very important, particularly for cognition and for functional benefits. But again, it shouldn't detract too much from the balance component. In a practical setting, if the GP can be aware of what programs are available in their setting and try and refer to those which are really targeted towards falls prevention, and that should be an effective strategy.
What about vitamin D, Dr. Waldron?
The evidence for vitamin D has become increasingly clear, and I think general practitioners have picked up on this with the recent 100-fold increase over the last 10 years of vitamin D ordering. This is particularly relevant for older people who have low levels of vitamin D. They benefit in terms of falls and fracture prevention with prescription of high-dose cholecalciferol. By high-dose, I mean greater than 800 international units. So typically 1,000 units is what's prescribed in the Australian setting. The exact level is controversial, and it ranges from 50 nanomoles per litre to 75 nanomoles per litre as being the cutoff point for defining functional deficiency of vitamin D. And I tend to use now the level of 60 nanomoles per litre, but I think somewhere in that range is reasonable.
And what about people in aged care facilities? Should they be tested or monitored together with vitamin D supplementation?
Well, residential care and vitamin D is a bit of a no-brainer, really, in terms of we know that all people who are in residential care benefit from vitamin D prescription regardless of their level. So the randomised control trials that have been performed haven't really taken the level in as being something which they exclude or include patients. So at a practical level, the cholecalciferol 1,000 units can be prescribed for all residents, and this is felt to be safe, provided they don't have known hypercalcemia. That's really the only contraindication. the trouble is that it's not necessarily funded, so and patients are on a lot of other medications. So there's a variety of barriers to prescription of vitamin D, which we're unsure the exact uptake, but it's probably between 30 and 50% in Australian residential care, but that's not well documented.
Dr. Waldron, in your article, you also mentioned benzodiazepine withdrawal. Now, many GPs might feel that there would be a lot of patient resistance to suggesting this, especially for those of our patients who've been on benzos for what feels like a very, very long time. Do you have any suggestions to GPs on how this might be managed?
Yes, as you mentioned, it is a very common problem with 20% of older people on long-term benzodiazepines. The good news is that the GPs have a pivotal role in really changing what is a difficult ingrained patient behaviour of taking medications to help them sleeping. The first of those is writing a letter to the patient with the recommendation. So this is received very well by patients and will lead to around 80% of them stopping benzodiazepines without any other intervention. If that doesn't work, and the individual will enrol in a kind of supported stepped withdrawal program, this can allow a further around 60% of patients to withdraw from benzodiazepines. So by a withdrawal program, I mean transferring their existing benzodiazepine to equivalent diazepam dose and then reducing the diazepam by 25% per week and supporting them with around 5 consultations, just going through their various concerns and supporting that withdrawal. Patients should be aware that when they do come off the medication, they will get rebound insomnia and withdrawal symptoms like off any addictive substance. And patients often think that that's a sign that the medication's beneficial. So early counselling that to expect these problems and that's a sign of withdrawal is an important first step. General practitioners have obviously been dealing with this problem and often use melatonin as a bridge. There's not great evidence to support this, although melatonin is a safe medication or hormone to be prescribed. It has doesn't have the same side effects that benzodiazepines have. Although there's not great use for the evidence for the use of melatonin in this setting, there's an interesting analysis of a database which showed that when general practitioners prescribe melatonin, there is an increased risk of benzodiazepine withdrawal when they look at medication databases. So the GPs are probably ahead of the evidence for this one. It's a really important area to be addressing in primary care. The harm from these medications is significant in terms of increased falls, fractures, motor vehicle accidents. And more recently, we've become aware of the association with increased death. And that's got to be a motivating factor for patients. Other side effects are well known of sedation, drowsiness in the morning, reduced memory and concentration, and these impact on patient quality of life also. The benefits of these drugs are really unfounded with no real evidence for traditional benzodiazepines extending beyond a couple of weeks. So it's difficult to justify them as a long-term clinical intervention.
Dr. Waldron, in the article, you also mentioned multifactorial assessments and falls clinics. Who, in your opinion, would benefit the most from a referral to a falls clinic? And what actually happens? What comprises a multifactorial assessment?
Yes, falls clinics are an effective intervention. But firstly, I'll take you through what they involve. Typically, a patient would be seen by a number of different practitioners, including a geriatrician, physio, and occupational therapist, most commonly. The assessments usually take hours. So, for anywhere from 1 to 6 hours would be what a falls clinic involves. And the interventions are really based around finding out the factors which can be modified. And typically, this will include changes to medication, optimising medical conditions, as well as exercise, programs for falls prevention and often an OT home visit. So it's a combination of those factors tailored to the patient. Generally, falls clinics should be reserved for those who are higher risk of falls. And there may be clinical factors which the GP can consider as important, such as recurrent falls, so falling twice or more per in the last year. Unexplained falls are important because these may be due to subtle medical conditions such as cardiovascular conditions and often requires a longer specialist review. The falls that result in deteriorating patient conditions such as worsening physical, social or psychological health, that's an important reason for referral. And those which result in injury such as fractures, head injuries, or result on the patient being on the floor for a long lie, greater than an hour, there are other important factors. So really, the GP's needs to try and identify the frailer, older people with more medical conditions who are having more problems with their falls and try and encourage them towards the falls clinic intervention.
Thank you, Dr. Waldron. For more information, please refer to December 2012's focus article titled Falls Prevention in Older Adults, led by Dr. Nicholas Waldron.